I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to.
Thank you for listening to A Public Affair. I'm your host, Karma Chavez. I've got an exciting show planned for you today. In late 2013, the American Studies Association, an academic organization of roughly 5,000 academics, voted overwhelmingly in support of a resolution to endorse and honor the call of Palestinian civil society for a boycott of Israeli academic institutions. The resolution also indicated that the American Studies Association supports the rights of students and scholars everywhere to engage in research and public speaking about Israel-Palestine and in support of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. The ASA was the second academic organization to vote as such after the Asian American Studies Association, and a few others, the Native American Indigenous Studies Association and Critical Ethnic Studies, have followed, and others have voted in contentious battles. But while academic organizations led by professors have only more recently begun to move on such resolutions, student organizers, many who are Palestinian American and many others who are Jewish American, have been organizing for more than a decade to pass divestment resolutions, asking their universities to withdraw from investments from corporations that benefit from Israeli occupation and destruction of Palestinian homes. These students have built an incredible national movement, as local chapters of Students for Justice in Palestine have grown on university campuses nationwide. These students have engaged in bold actions, and many have suffered threats to their freedom of speech, have been charged with crimes such as disrupting public events, and have faced immense acts of intimidation by those who oppose them. Still, they continue on. The story of such students is told in Nora Barros Friedman's new book, In Our Power, U.S. Students Organize for Justice in Palestine, from Just World Books, which is a small independent press. Nora Barros Friedman is a journalist, staff editor at the Electronic Intifada. She's also contributed to Al Jazeera English, Inner Press Service, Truthout.org, Left Turn Magazine, and various other international media outlets. From 2003 to 2010, she was the senior producer and co-host of Flashpoints, an award-winning investigative news magazine operating out of KPFA Pacifica Radio in Berkeley. Nora has been regularly reporting from Palestine since 2004, and Samantha Brotman of Jewish Voice for Peace said of the book In Our Power that it leaves the reader, quote, both empowered and informed. Even seasoned activists would do well to read this book, as it is not only a source of inspiration, but it takes on the crucial task of placing the individual within a larger context. In Our Power should therefore be required reading for anyone in the world of Palestine activism. So, Nora Barros Friedman, welcome to A Public Affair.
Thank you so much, Karma.
So did I get anything wrong in that introduction, Nora?
That was like the sweetest, longest introduction ever. Thank you. It was great.
I don't know if that's supposed to be a compliment, Nora, if it's the longest ever. No,
it was great. Thank you.
Well, and I should say we encountered each other last November at an event in Chicago, and that was right when your book had come out.
Exactly.
And so, and I had ordered it from Rainbow Bookstore, another, you know, local enterprise you should support here in town. And it took a while for it to get in. So I just got it a couple weeks ago and called you immediately to get you on the show. So I'm very excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So let's start with a basic question here for you. You've devoted a vast majority of your adult life to this. So why Palestine?
Yeah. That's a really good question. In 2003, I started interning at KPFA, a Pacifica radio station in the Bay Area. Actually, my first day of the internship was the day after Rachel Corrie was killed in Gaza trying to defend a Palestinian family's home. She was run over by an Israeli bulldozer. And it was also the day before the U.S. invaded Iraq. So it was a really intense and heartbreaking week. I just, you know, as growing up in Berkeley with a very political background, you know, with my family, I was, you know, it was just kind of this point in time that was, I just felt we all had to do something. And so I started working at the radio station, just helping out whatever, you know, in whatever capacity I could. And that eventually led to me getting a position as a producer and eventually as a co-host. And, you know, during, especially in 2003, when it was the height of the, you know, the Palestinian intifada, and also, you know, everything that was going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, my colleague Dennis, who's the host of Flashpoints, he literally handed me a stack of reports that he had printed out that morning when I got to the office, and he said, "Here, you take Palestine. I've got to focus on Iraq." And so I was like, "Okay, Palestine, sure." And within, you know, a few months, I had realized that, you know, everyone has their own issue that they're really passionate about. And Palestine became my issue, and I started going there to report and to work with kids in a refugee camp to set up a media station there. And then I just started writing for print as well as doing radio broadcasting, and here we are, 12 years later.
So, yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, it's amazing to think about, like, sort of the kind of serendipitous start to...
Yeah,
focusing on Palestine. How many times have you traveled to the region?
I've been there almost 20 times since 2004. I haven't been in a couple of years, but that's because I've been focusing on the student solidarity movement here in this country, which I think is so important to focus on and to report on, and really, you know, looking at the social movements of the past, whether it be the student-led anti-apartheid South Africa movement or the student-led free speech movement, you know, here we see another burgeoning and really strong and powerful movement for social justice and human rights that is really facing so many challenges. And yet these students with, you know, their immense amount of energy and determination and passion about this issue and about their role and responsibility as Americans, you know, whose taxpayers, as taxpayers and as people who pay tuition to their universities that are invested in companies that do business with Israel, they really have taken on this role of trying to figure out how to be a wedge in that machine, and how to make their voices heard. So that's what I've been focusing on the last few years.
And so how did you learn about the significance of the student movements?
Actually, you know, I mean, it was always kind of brewing in the background in the reporting that I did. You know, here in Berkeley, of course, we saw the growth, especially of Students for Justice in Palestine at UC Berkeley. And, you know, the activists and the journalists that I was, you know, hanging out with and forging these, you know, relationships with were getting more and more involved in student solidarity movements. And so, you know, whenever there was, you know, something happening in Palestine, there would always be a response on campus really close to where I worked and lived. And so, especially in 2010, when UC Berkeley initiated its first real push for divestment, it really was such a moving experience to be there with the students at these, like, 5-10-hour debates inside the Student Senate, hearing rooms, and seeing the you know, just the unbridled passion that these students had for, you know, especially the Palestinian students who, you know, were seeing what their tuition dollars were going to fund, you know, to oppress and to uproot and to ethnically cleanse their family, 10,000 miles away. And so that really, you know, I started covering the divestment movements around campus starting in about 2010, and it just kind of grew from there. And you know, in 2012, I was approached by Helena Cobbin, who's the wonderful publisher of Just World Books. And she said, you know, you've been doing this great reporting. You should really just write a book. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to write a book. Like, that's way too much work. That's, you know, I've never even thought about writing a book before. you know, and lo and behold, 2 years later, a book was published. So just because of, you know, I was so moved by these students. It was a pleasure for me to report on their activism, no matter how big or small, you know, for the Electronic Intifada in my daily work life. And then being able to really go around the country, I went to 11 different states and spoke to nearly 70 students from more than 30 different universities. And just to hear their stories and their experiences and really try to investigate who these kids are, who these powerful, you know, movement builders are and why their movement is so important. It was a lot of hard work and also a lot of fun to write.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can definitely tell the kind of the playfulness of a number of the students in their creativity. And I wonder if we could talk a bit about, so I was actually very surprised to know how early some of these groups, like specifically Students for Justice in Palestine, got started. Will you tell us a little bit about just kind of the various groups that work under that name or other, you know, names?
Sure. Yeah. So Students for Justice in Palestine was, began on UC Berkeley's campus, right after the Second Intifada erupted, and, you know, around the time when the U.S. was invading Afghanistan. And it was kind of, you know, at the time there were many, many groups on campus, all kind of working independently, but toward, you know, a similar goal of, like, you know, education and advocacy for Palestinian human rights, but there wasn't really like a centralized focus or any sort of like organized campaign around the country. And that kind of changed just in the past few years, actually, when Students for Justice in Palestine chapters around the country started popping up, and students realized that they needed, there was a need for kind of a broader coalition. So they formed National Students for Justice in Palestine, and right now I think there's over 150 different chapters on campuses around the country. You know, there's still a chapter, of course, at UC Berkeley. There's chapters, you know, all up and down the West Coast and in the Midwest and on the East Coast. Sorry, someone's at the door.
That's okay.
And also, you know, coalitions within that broader umbrella of SJP National have popped up. So we have SJP West, which is, you know, West Coast SJP chapters. There's an SJP Midwest. There's SJP Chicago, even, which has, you know, a bunch of different chapters because Chicago has so many universities. And so students are really, you know, it's become this really important way not just to solidify the coalition, but also to provide each other with, you know, advice and working on strategic campaigns and, you know, letting each other know, well, this worked for us when we tried to do, you know, XYZ during Israeli Apartheid Week, or we ran into a lot of opposition when we tried this, or, you know, even organizing for their annual conference. There's a lot of knowledge sharing and a lot of support, especially for the SJP chapters that, you know, are new or very scarcely resourced, or who only have a few students. It's really been an incredible opportunity for students to support each other and help guide this movement into a bigger and broader space.
It's really exciting to hear about that history and to think about both the kind of the local specificity, but then how the kind of need of a decentralized national organization was still a big part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is on top of, I'm, you know, not exaggerating, a century of organizing here in this country for Palestinian human rights and for Palestine solidarity. Primarily, you know, the work that was done at the beginning of last century up until this point has been done by Palestinians, you know, people who fled Zionist expansion in Palestine before the State of Israel was established. you know, especially after the Nakba, after 1948, and then another wave of diaspora immigration happened after 1967, after the military occupation. And so Palestinians themselves have been very self-organized in this country, you know, acting as kind of diaspora community organizations and support for members of the community who are, you know, still struggling to get their rights of return and, you know, the basic human rights that are afforded to everyone else. So it's, you know, so the student movement can't be disassociated from the incredible work that Palestinian Americans have done in the last century as well.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us on Public Affair, I'm Karma Chavez, and we're talking with Nora Barros Freeman about her new book, In Our Power, U.S. Students Organize for Justice in Palestine, from Just World Books, which is a small independent press. Will you introduce us to a couple of the students who you spoke with, who they are, and why they're involved in this work?
Okay, let's see. So one of the first students that I actually met to, you know, on my whirlwind trip to collect as many stories as possible is this incredible woman named Rebecca Pierce. She just graduated from UC Santa Cruz here in the Bay Area. And she had been doing a lot of organizing to get, you know, basically just to get basic resources for Students for Justice in Palestine there. And also, you know, to grow the organization and introduce divestment resolutions on campus. She's been just one of the most exceptional voices of, you know, morality on this issue that I encountered. And she's incredible. She's a filmmaker. She's a social justice activist. She, you know, had to go really head to toe with actually a woman who is on faculty at UC Santa Cruz, who's also the head of this very kind of vicious anti-Palestinian organization called AMCHA, which purports itself to speak for Jewish values, especially on campuses. But actually, it's an organization that really seeks to crush student protest and to crush the Palestine Solidarity Movement on campuses, and to really turn it into, you know, she's trying to make it look like students who advocate for Palestinian human rights are anti-Semites, which is a very disturbing trend that's actually, you know, expanding across this country. When Israel advocacy organizations can't date the facts about what Israel's policies do to Palestinians and the entire, you know, kind of racist, ethnocentric, supremacist, apartheid regime that it actually is, they resort to slander and demonization of the entire movement and trying to conflate criticism of Israeli policies with anti-Semitism, which is absurd and outrageous. And as you mentioned at the beginning, there's so many Jewish members of Students for Justice in Palestine and so many anti-Zionist Jewish advocates for Palestinian rights, because there's criticism of Israeli policy has nothing to do with hatred of Jews. It's patently absurd and false. And so Rebecca has been kind of a tireless advocate of speaking out as a Jewish woman, as a Black woman who is, you know, obviously, taking on this absurd conflation by these outside political organizations. So she's one of the most determined, powerless, powerful and passionate activists that I met. There's also, gosh, there's so many activists I could talk about. I spoke with a graduate student at Portland State University. His name is Wael El Asadi, and he's a Palestinian refugee born in Syria and then moved to the U.S. And he had never been to Palestine. His you know, his grandfather was born there, and he decided finally to go. He was really involved in, like, anti-war organizing here in the States, but had never really been involved in Palestine organizing, but went to Palestine, actually visited the house that his grandfather had been born in and then was expelled from, and is now being, you know, settled by an Israeli person there. And he went and he visited that house, and his grandfather had drawn him a map of the village. You know, he hadn't been there for 60, 70 years, but his grandfather knew precisely the roads and the houses and the trees, and so he was able to visit that. And after he came back, he ended up starting a Palestine solidarity organization on campus called SUPER, Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights. And although it's not called SJP, it's part of, you know, it's under the umbrella of the SJP National Coalition. And he's been one of the most instrumental activists, especially in the Pacific Northwest, fighting for Palestine equal rights and the rights of students to organize on campus. So, I mean, there's almost 70 students. I could rattle off a lot about all of them, but that's just a tiny taste.
Sure. Well, and I mean, in the kind of interviews you did, one of the things I really appreciated about this book is you have interviews that are interwoven with the chapters where you're kind of explaining context and about what has happened. In those chapters, you get introduced to many more. I mean, there's only a handful of the students you're actually able to profile in the interviews, but
right.
I think you maybe hear from all 70 throughout the chapters. Is that true?
Yeah, I did try to get everybody in who I interviewed, you know, whether, you know, it's like a full two-page, you know, Q&A, or whether it's just, you know, a two-sentence bit here and there. So, yeah, I wanted, you know, I mean, these students spent time out of their day of studying and organizing to speak with me, so I wanted to honor them as best that I could in the short, you know, book format that I had. So, I tried to get everyone in.
Which is no small feat with that number of interviews.
Right. It was a lot of late night transcribing. I got really good at typing quickly. So.
Yeah, I've been there.
So yeah,
fully understand that. So I wanted to talk a little bit about. So you already kind of pointed to this earlier, but I wanted you to expand a bit on this. So one of your chapters talks about the campus as a battleground, and I think you've kind of pointed this, but I wonder if you could elaborate a bit on why that metaphor of battleground seems to be appropriate.
Yeah. Actually, that was a word I believe that was used by one of the main Israel advocacy organizations in talking about, you know, the campus is a battleground for these ideological, you know, conflicts or whatever, where they've identified, you know, this movement led by students as, you know, as a very dangerous movement that could, you know, influence other communities on campus to, you know, sympathize with the Palestinian plight. And so there has been, you know, millions of dollars poured in by agencies affiliated with the Israeli government to try and crush student movements for Palestine solidarity on campuses across the country. So these massive Israel lobby organizations like the Anti-Defamation League and AIPAC and the Zionist Organization of America, and then these kind of affiliated agencies like Stand With Us, which is an organization solely devoted to discrediting student activism on campus in Palestine issues. They take money from the Israeli government. It's like this, you know, so we have these massive organizations with, you know, unlimited amounts of money, against these student groups on campus that are incredibly underfunded. In fact, you know, I was just speaking with a student today at a university on the East Coast who said that the administration has, you know, continuously attempted to block them from getting funds to hold events and for, you know, basically like postering and flyering. I mean, things that student organizations usually have access to. It is an epidemic around the country that Palestine solidarity groups on campuses are being singled out for special treatment by the administration, which, you know, by administrations which are under pressure by these outside political organizations to underfund or to kind of put roadblocks in front of student organizing campaigns. You know, and these organizations come to the administration saying that they're very concerned about, you know, Jewish students on campus, that they'll be discriminated against, that, you know, that criticism of Israeli policy is equal to anti-Semitism. All of these fabrications that are meant to intimidate the administrations into really singling out these student organizations. And so, you know, student organizations around the country literally have to hold bake sales and and, like, you know, these very modest fundraisers just to get the resources that other student groups enjoy, you know, without any restrictions. And, you know, this is really, this points to the level of panic, really, that these Israel lobby organizations, these massive, you know, agencies are coming down onto college campuses and trying to intimidate students and student government leaders and administrations into crushing student protests, precisely because they know that once students understand what's happening in Palestine, once these education campaigns keep going and these student groups ally with other communities on campus who are marginalized, who represent marginalized communities, that there is so much, there's like a groundswell of support then for the Palestine, for Palestine solidarity, and that frightens them. And so they're trying as desperately they can to really stop it in its tracks, even if that means censorship and violations of free speech and First Amendment rights for these student groups.
Have some of the students who are involved in the Palestinian solidarity movement, have they talked directly with Jewish students who say that they feel threatened by some of the actions, or is there any conversation among those groups?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know, it's different on every campus. Again, there are so many Jewish students involved with Students for Justice in Palestine chapters that the whole, you know, insinuation that Students for Justice in Palestine discriminates against Jewish students or seeks to harm Jewish students on campus is completely absurd and you know, should be disregarded outright because it's, I mean, it's false. There's nothing in Palestine solidarity student organizing that has anything to do with hatred of the Jewish people or anything like it. You know, it's patently false, all these accusations. And there have been students who are groomed by these outside political organizations who are told that they will be harassed for being Jewish on campus if a divestment resolution passes in the Student Senate, who say that they will face, you know, threats and bigotry, you know, which is, again, it's absurd. But there's, I mean, these students, you know, the Palestine Solidarity students are very quick to portray this as what it is. It's a student movement for human rights. It has nothing to do with discrimination against any group. And the fact that, you know, Zionism is being conflated with Judaism is a real tragedy, and it's a problem. You know, a political ideology based upon an idea that one group is supreme against another is what people are fighting. You know, the students on campus are fighting for equal rights, are fighting for human rights, are fighting for the right to be recognized and the right for self-determination, and that has nothing to do with anybody's religion. So it's different on every campus. But we do see this trend of these, you know, these tropes kind of repeating themselves over and over again, trying to conflate criticism of Israeli policy with a criticism of the Jewish people, and that's patently false.
So, Nora, our phones haven't been ringing very much here. I wonder if I could ask you, or again, talking with Nora Barros Friedman about her book, In Our Power, U.S. Students Organize for Justice in Palestine. So I want to, I guess in the last few minutes that we have here, I wanted to talk a bit about questions of coalition and solidarity, because it was really inspiring to see how students are building cross-movement coalitions. And so I was wondering if you could talk a bit about who the students who are doing Palestinian solidarity work are building connections with, and on what bases are they building those connections?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, you know, these Israel-aligned organizations are increasingly panicked about the solidarity and building of bridges between different marginalized communities, including the Palestinian community, on campuses. And, you know, just in the past few months, we saw Students for Justice in Palestine activists organizing alongside Black Lives Matter or activists in Ferguson, Missouri, you know, talking about the connections between kind of state-sponsored violence on both communities and also kind of the literal connections. I mean, Ferguson police officers have gone to Israel to train with Israeli police. And of course, we see, you know, weapons sharing. There are tear gas canisters that are made in the U.S. that are used on nonviolent protesters in the occupied West Bank. And so, you know, that's one connection that's being made currently. There's also, I talked with a bunch of students in the border states in New Mexico and Arizona who are organizing alongside student groups which work with undocumented persons along the border, with indigenous communities, with, you know, communities that are fighting against the militarization of the border and the enormous deportation policies that this administration has enacted. And so, you know, we see Students for Justice in Palestine members locking themselves down to buses that deport, you know, that transport persons who are going to be deported by the Obama administration. You know, and we see so that's a huge kind of cross movement solidarity building that's happening. We also see, you know, students from all different backgrounds, you know, South Asian communities, East Asian communities, African communities, Jewish communities, you know, LGBT communities on campus, who are all noticing the similarities between the oppression of marginalized people from you know, all over the world and from all different kind of social, economic, gender backgrounds, who are fighting also for equality and recognition and human rights. And so those, you know, so when we see divestment resolutions being heard at the student senate level and on campuses across the country, you know, those resolutions are not just brought forth and supported by Palestine solidarity organizations, but they're supported by 30, 40, 50 different allied student groups on campus who all support this notion of, you know, pulling tuition funds from companies that do business with an apartheid military occupation. And that's what's, you know, another thing that's really beautiful about this movement is that students are making these connections themselves. They're understanding intrinsically that in order to fight for human rights for one group, you have to fight for human rights for every group. And it's, you know, it's a beautiful, very, very moving understanding of intersectionality, and these students are expressing that and embodying it every day in their activism.
Mm-hmm. Well, and related to that, I thought one of the things that was really great about the way you sort of ended the book was talking about the very nuanced ways that these students define solidarity as a practice. And so you sort of touched on it there, but will you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it is very nuanced. It's very different for every student that I interviewed. But they said that, you know, solidarity isn't just words on paper, but it's how you act in your everyday life and how you think about the world and how you ally yourself with different people and with different groups of people and different communities. Solidarity, you know, for some students I spoke with was talking about, you know, especially those who are Palestinian American, talking about what it, solidarity is being in exile, is fighting for the rights of their family members 10,000 miles away. You know, to other people, solidarity is, you know, for some of the Jewish students, solidarity is listening to what Palestinians have to say, is to recognize their history, to recognize their you know, exile based on the fact that they're not Jews, and what it means to be a person of privilege as a Jewish person, as a white person in this country, you know, when you're doing activism work and taking a back seat and you know, kind of, you know, leading, listening to voices that are leading, and not trying to lead yourself. So it's really, you know, they are, as you said, they're really nuanced and very intimate and emotional, these definitions. And I think that's something, that's a conversation that continues to happen in these student circles, where there's a lot of discussion about privilege and about solidarity and about what it means to be a person in your own skin. And, you know, in this country, which is heavily discriminatory and racialized and, you know, very, very privileging of one group over another. So, you know, it's pretty incredible to see these discussions happening.
Mm-hmm. What I have to say, as a scholar who teaches about social movement and about coalition and activism, I thought it was really wonderful to read that. It was something I can't wait to share with students future classes. We only have about a minute left here, Nora. I wonder if you could say just a bit about, if people are listening today and, you know, they're inspired by the work that these students are doing, what are the ways you would recommend supporting these students?
That's a great question. Well, you can learn more at the National Students for Justice in Palestine website, and I think it's sjpnational.org. You know, if you're living in a city, there's a good chance that there is a university nearby, and there's also a good chance that there's a Palestine Solidarity organization on that campus. So I'd encourage people to just get to know these students, to, you know, attend Israeli Apartheid Week, which is an annual week of events dedicated to educating campus communities about situation in Palestine. And they need support from the community as well. You know, their actions don't exist in a bubble as much as the opposition would like them, you know, would like people to believe. But this is a you know, a general human rights issue. This issue affects everybody as Americans, as taxpayers, and as people who support human rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have to end it there today. Nora Barros-Friedman, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Karma.
Our guest today, Nora Barros-Friedman, talking about her new book, In Our Power, U.S. Students Organize for Justice in Palestine, from Just World Book. I'm really encouraging folks to please pick up Nora's book, In Our Power, U.S. Students Organize for Justice in Palestine. This is a compelling read, and regardless of where you stand on the issue of Israel-Palestine, this is about student activism, young people organizing in very powerful ways, and so I really encourage you to pick that book up. I want to thank you all so much for listening today. I'm your host, Karma Chavez, and this has been A Public Affair.